Ladies and gentlemen, boys, girls, and, well, whatever you feel like you are tonight, it's Sunday night. We're live on YouTube. This is a callback, a throwback to the many days of old gone by when Matt Martin used to grace us with his presence and come on here by himself and answer a bunch of, I don't know, Ray? I mean, some good questions, some not so good questions, Ray? They always say, Ray, if you want better answers, ask better questions. And I think that's what
that
we
you always say that.
To.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what we all, and that's what we try to do too. Because, you know, to me, the sign of somebody's intelligence is when, rather than following up a question with just a blasé answer, they ask a question to get a better understanding of what is being asked of them in the first place.
Or in some cases, Ray, they might just say, hey, check out this link on golfcourselawnstore.com, and that'll fix everything. Right?
Yeah, that's right. You need the more answer, Headway G or Miramichi Green. I mean, you just need more, as much as your wallet can afford.
That's the way Ron rolls, because boron deficiencies are rampant, folks, right? It's a plague. It's an epidemic. It's a problem. So if you need that
and
kind of stuff,
it'll break your lawn, guys. It'll absolutely totally break your lawn. Is you don't have that boron at one part per million or higher, you dead.
Yeah, not a good situation. So tonight we would typically be recording our show, Burn of a Turn, which is a separate podcast that if you don't watch live, that means you're not a subscribe member to our channel and our Patreon. So if you do want to do that in the future, go ahead and go to www.patreon.com/burnerturn. That way you'll have access to us doing this live like we do every Sunday night. However, Matt is not here tonight. Matt is tending to some family affairs. Good. All good. And so he's trying to take care of that. So we thought we would jump on here, do some more questions, because every show that we've had for the last 4 weeks, we've had a backlog of questions. And unfortunately, Ray, just like Ron Henry doesn't do, we don't have a recommendation of where to buy everything that we say, right? We're not.
We don't.
We're just like that guy, Travis Shaddox, right? That he ripped off for not having a place to buy urea. So, okay. we may, I have to, in the background, get with Jay Pink. We may dump into a quick Joe Knows Turf for the Sunday night diehards that like us doing that on the Joe Knows Turf segment. So we will endeavor to do that. But first, we do have some backlog questions, and we will take questions from anybody in our chat here this evening, especially your members that have tried to join us live. So we appreciate that. Okay. Let's go ahead and get back to what we had stacked up from last time. Okay. Okay. This is Todd. Todd says, love the show. Keep it up. What do you recommend for a small 100-ish square foot area in my backyard that my dogs, that is my dog's wrestling ring? Okay. Get super compacted from high traffic and also damaged from ice and dogs playing during the cold of winter. I don't understand frost delays. Then just throwing down seed every couple weeks and trying to grow it in as they destroy it. Irrigated lawn and live in the arid section of eastern Washington. You recommend aeration and sanding. Any tips appreciated? Well, Ray, this sounds like kind of like a sports turf question a little bit. Just, you know, traffic, confined space, all that kind of stuff.
This is your lane, Ryan. This is your lane for sure. Because here's what I'm thinking.
Go ahead.
A couple of big and rambunctious dogs. I think that's equal to a football team going at it all out. What do you think, Ryan? This is your lane.
I think it's pretty close. And as long as this guy's last name isn't Vic, I think we can talk. And as a result, let's see here. So, they're going to go out there during all weather conditions. I get that, Todd. You know, the more that you can keep them off during, you know, periods when it's real, real wet, or take them out somewhere else and let them frolic out there. I'm not sure if that's even possible. But, you know, consider that, because you accelerate that wear and tear, accelerate that damage in wet and soft conditions. And I'm sure you know that and have seen that. Other thing is, by throwing down seed every couple of weeks, you're doing something that's probably about one of the more effective things as far as you know, effort to results, right, that you can possibly do, right? So it's a pretty low effort thing that's going to give you good results, good return on your investment. I mentioned it here on the show numerous times, but there was a study done by Frank Rossi and the guys over at Cornell years ago where they looked at a concept called seed banking. And the idea was born out of like, they did this on like a high school football field. I'll see if I can find the paper and put it in the chat here in a little bit. But basically they were saying, hey,
is this it?
Oh, wait, sorry. I'm on the, wait.
Long-term trends? Nope, never mind. I thought I found it. Never mind.
No, let me see here. So anyhow, the idea behind seed banking is that, you know, in the old days, they would just say, hey, you know, on your high school football field, go out and put 10 pounds of perennial ryegrass at the end of the season and, you know, hopefully it'll grow back. Well, what they did was they split that into different treatments, Ray. And they said, well, what if we did, split that into 2 5-pound treatments and we split a 10 pound into 2 or 4 2.5-pound treatments, so on and so forth. What they found was that by going out with smaller amounts of seed at a higher frequency, they actually had more green cover at the end of the season after all that traffic had gone through. So the idea there is that there's some seed that's always germinating, right? And you're also having attritional losses through traffic and things like that, right? So
right.
Something, it's a good practice to try. As far as the aeration and sanding, things that you can do to increase bulk density, right? So, decrease bulk density. Sorry, decrease bulk density. So that would be, putting sand on the top and trying to get yourself so that you don't compact as easy and you're not as affected by those rain events. I think that to get to the point where it would be actually worth it and you would see a huge benefit, I think you'd have to stay on that pretty regularly, like probably 2 to 3 times a year, and continue to do it over and over and over again. So if you want to sign up for that, if you're going to be in that house long term, maybe look into it. But for now, I'd say that your seed banking method works just fine. A little bit, and I mean like maybe no more than 20% more of what else your yard is getting, additional nitrogen fertilizer to try and help grow through some of the stress and traffic. Otherwise, you should be good to go. So that's what I got on that one. So good luck with the dog wrestling.
That sounds good. As long as it's dog wrestling and not the other thing, because Michael Vick, sorry, he's another guy for the wood chipper.
Yeah, he throws a lot of touchdown passes, but he did some pretty inhumane things. So
horrible.
I thought you were going to talk about ladies wrestling in like tapioca pudding or something. I mean,
I'm down for like that. I'm down for that. In fact, I'd even join him.
I'm not a big tapioca guy, and chicks wrestling kind of freaked me out a little bit. I get a little intimidated, to be honest with you. Okay, Jerry Billings had sent us a message, and I think we reviewed his question on air in the last week's show. So he gave us this soil test, which let me dump this back in so we can. Oh gosh darn it! We can look at this, and I think we talked about this, Ray, with Aldo, mm-hmm. and it was not terrible from what we saw, but then Jerry's lawn, we said, hey, let us see some pictures and see what we're dealing with here. So, Jim, can you want to put the soil test up real quick? We'll take a peek at that, and then we can run through the... Brent says, you're my boy, Blue, referring a little old school reference there. let's see here. Okay. Yes. Yes, I do remember this one now. I think what we said here, Ray, was that we didn't need to play around too much with soil pH, that ammonium sulfate would be appropriate here. Phosphorus, for the most part, should be fine, especially for returning clippings, and potassium, potentially. I think the Springer Paul would say, go ahead and go. Yeah.
But passable, but not urgent.
Right. And we said that at that time, hey, show us some pictures of the lawn. Like, soil test looks pretty decent. So Jerry sent us an album that is from just today, I think. Wow. These are new pictures coming to us live. Looks good. I like that rock there. Ooh, I like the little bridge. Very bucolic, so I don't know where Jerry is located?
Give me a hot minute and I can find out.
Uh-oh. Jerry Pank is going into the NSA files.
I think, if I remember rightly, Jerry was somewhere in the Midwest.
Yeah, Illinois.
Illinois. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, this looks about on par for what I would call, you know, spring turf in the Midwest. There's nothing here that alarms me. You know, there were some areas in the front. If we go back to the very first picture. Yeah. You know, there's a little, looks like a dry spot almost. That's right there in the foreground. Mm-hmm. That to me doesn't look like anything fertility related or anything like that. I would check that just for moisture more than anything. But I think the lawn looks fine. I guess from a deeper, darker green, Ray, you know, again, from a nitrogen application, I think your mileage may vary between urea and ammonium sulfate here just a little bit. And you're probably going to get just a tad more benefit out of ammonium sulfate and justify the slightly increased cost, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. And the alternate way is to MLSN it, do urea, but then have to chase your sulfur number. Which one
That's
do
right.
you want to do, right?
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't look like, I'm going to guess Jerry's not irrigated. So, you know, the ideal scenario would be if he was to go out there and put that sulfur up now, use the summer heat and some water and really grind that pH down a little bit. But it could be a little risky.
You know
so
what?
I think, go ahead.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't, Ryan, because, you know, at pH 6.5, I wouldn't want to drop it any higher. Or, you know, drop it any lower or raise it any higher. I would probably say maintain with AMS, but always be watching your pH to make sure that the AMS is not getting you down to like below 6. I mean, how's that? I mean, I would just take that course because you know what I'm seeing in his turf now that I see the pictures? This is sulfur deficiency. Ryan, this is sulfur. Okay.
Yeah,
this peculiar, I'm going to call this the plasticky yellow green rather than that
plastic
blue green that everybody's looking for. Okay. And this is, I can see how this would be an appearance issue. And my first impulse would be to incorporate AMS into the nutrient program to try to get, you know, better color out of the grass.
And that makes sense. Oh man. Okay. So yes. Sorry, I'm getting a message here and let me pop back over here. Okay. So Jake. Don't know which Jake, but Jake. It could be a soft J too. It could be Yake. I don't know.
We don't know.
But he says, we had a large gathering and I accepted my fate that I'd have lawn abuse. What's the best way to handle damage from not only high foot traffic, but a couple of cars that didn't fit in the driveway? Have some small tire tracks, but a few deeper ones. Cool season in the Midwest. Well, listen, okay. I just want to, this is my take, and Ray, we might disagree on this one, and it's okay. I'm not going to say every lawn is like this, but I would say that 95% of the lawns that we look at, talk about, and deal with on a regular basis are meant to be used, right? And that doesn't mean that you park cars, you know, on them every damn weekend or whatever. But if you have a party, you know, yeah, you want to show it off and everything like that. But I think that there's also a functional aspect to, you know, showing off the lawn and letting it get beat up a little bit from a special event. And that's okay. I'm glad that he's accepted his fate. Hopefully it's not in jest that he's saying this, but Ray, do you agree or disagree? Like if somebody said, hey, Ray, I've got to have a party here. There's no flipping way I'm going to park all these cars in my driveway. So therefore I might have some on the lawn and there could be some stuff to, you know, deal with after the fact. Are you willing to accept this mission? What would you say?
I say, sure, no problem. Because there's ways to fix it after the cars have parked on it. Like, for example, if you pick up the depressed areas with a fork and then you roll the whole thing to even it out, that's a way. Another way is to sand it, to fill in all the gaps. I mean, you see, what I'm going to say about this is going to shock you, Ryan, but at the end of the day, it is only grass and it's mostly fixable.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I said the only thing you need to be careful with, this isn't necessarily directed at Jake, but if you are one of those people that are going to have to endure what Jake just did, and again, I appreciate his poise in handling the situation. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just, you know, complain about it. He comes out and says, hey, how do we put it back together? Is irrigation. So if you do have irrigation lines, but specifically mains and valves and things like that close to your driveway or areas that people are going to park, those are the things you want to be mindful of. If you do have that, and trees, strip lines, things like that. So, okay, cover that. Mm-hmm. Let's get more specific to Jake's thing. Somebody, I think Paul Smith or somebody down here in the chat had mentioned sod. You know, you could go that. I think that's sort of the top of the food chain, the top of the pyramid there is, mm-hmm. if you are impatient, Jake, and you're pissed and or swimming in money, just go ahead and get yourself some sod and see if you can match up. Now, what might be tough is if you have a really, really, specific seed blend and sod's not going to match up too well. That could be a problem, especially in cool season country. So, again, your mileage may vary there. But I would just follow the process of trying to loosen up the area. So if you do have some compaction there, even just sticking a straight shovel in the ground and just kind of wiggling it.
Fork.
Getting yourself a fork would do fine.
Fork. Actually, because I've taken up those kind of depressions with like a fork. And kind of pried them up and then rolled it all flat after. I mean, because you see, Ryan, that's just like fixing a golf divot, except on a much larger scale.
Agreed.
Okay? I mean, that's why I wasn't too bugged out about the idea of, oh, there's a tire track. Well, that's okay, because I know that at least in the Midwest, the soils have a property called plasticity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the soils have a property called plasticity, so that means that they're designed to move around. So if you just have one weekend party and after that no more, on the other hand, Ryan, this will be my pisser offer, is if somebody has a lawn and that becomes an area where the through traffic decides to use that corner of the lawn to cut corners, then I'm mad. But if this is a case of, oh, just this one weekend, then okay, what we do is lift up the depressions, roll it flat, give it a little bit of nitrogen, and grow it back, and then nobody will know it happened. Honest.
Agreed. And if you want to go the traditional route of just putting some soil down and throwing down seed, not the most opportune time to do that, but you could. You just have to fight through summer annuals and some other stuff. It'll take a lot longer if you do that. But
more effort. Way more work, actually.
Yeah. So if you're impatient, I think the sod route and, you know, watering the piss out of it and taking good care of it here this summer while it roots in and it, you know, you'll have to baby it all summer long. That's one option. The other option is, you know, try to fix it the best you can and, you know, live through it with the summertime and then, you know, come, I don't know, late August, early September, go ahead and fix it proper with soil and seed and, you know, go from there. So the last thing I'll say is this, Ray, is that a lot of times when we go through those fixes and those repairs, 99%+ of people have no idea that there was ever a problem there. It's just us that will fixate on it and know that there was a problem there. And we can't stand it. And I'm telling you, it is one of the hardest but most valuable lessons that any turf manager has to endure and live with, is that, you know, our standards are usually at the highest, especially when things are wrong. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what everybody else sees, especially our customers and what they perceive, both in terms of results and actions, are usually very different than what we do. So I think we have to tell, if you're in a position, unlike Jake, where he's the homeowner here, and you're a service provider, like what we were talking about with you and your situation, I would be very upfront with people on the actions that need to be taken and measure expectations on the results that could be achieved, right? So
yep.
Take it from there is that we're our own harshest critics and enemies sometimes, and it's okay if there's a little tire right out there. It's not like I don't picture, I don't know Jake at all. Never met him, never been to his house, but I don't picture Jake out there with his cutoff jorts that, you know, hang just below his scrotum, washing his 87 Ford F-150 pickup on a regular. Like those kind of people that park in their yard versus the sound like it was a special event. So if you are like that, Jake, yeah, you do have a pair of nut huggers. I'm not hating on you. I'm just saying, I don't think you like that. So
I think he's a pretty regular guy. You know, I think so too. So that's just how old he that I think, Ryan.
It's fair enough.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what's here now. Chris. Oh man, I don't know if I want to go into Chris's thing right now. We're gonna skip Chris's TED talk. That's I gotta have Matt here for that. I can't leave a man behind on that one. All right, let's see here. Tanner Moore says, thank God notification bell pulled me out of watching the fentanyl documentary. Pretty morbid shit. Someone sell me on silica preventing disease in turf grass. Well, Tanner, maybe you should just go back to the fentanyl doc, man. I don't know. Hard telling.
Hard to see.
Steve-O. Hopefully not the Steve-O that had sliced the webbings of his toes with the business end of those manila envelopes. Ray, did you ever watch the movie Jackass?
Yes, I have. And I remember when it was a regular thing on MTV. Actually, Johnny Knoxville. I mean, God, why did he have that name? Would do all of these stupid things with his friends, and come to find out, one of the people on that show, my God, does that guy need to get his life together?
Oh,
because
one of them died.
Yeah, that guy. No, Bam Margera.
You're thinking of Bam. Yeah, Bam Margera. He's bad. Yeah, Ryan Dunn died.
Come on,
it's not good.
Yeah, Ryan Dunn died, and even after Ryan Dunn died tragically, instead of Bam Margera doing better, Bam Margera is just on a spiral where, I don't know, he's going to probably crash his car high as a kite on God knows what. I mean, that's what it looks like, because, you know, I have to wonder about people where they just have this absolute appetite for self-destruction.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So Steve-O did get his life back together again. So God bless him for that. He is asking us, how do I get rid of moles? I put down some triads aside weeks ago to kill grub worms, but this little shithead is sticking around. All right.
I got bad news for Steve-O. I got super bad news because,
what's that?
Because moles don't necessarily just eat grubs, they're also interested in earthworms. So the best way I can think of to make this mole go away is you're going to have to find yourself that rodent bait that is in the shape and form of an earthworm called talparid, and stick it down that mole's burrow. I mean, because this is, Ryan, this is a myth, another, you know, lawn meme myth, where they say that if you nuke your lawn to kill all of the grubs, you're not going to have things like skunks or armadillos or moles coming around and digging up your lawn. However, the truth is that those same animals actually like to dig up the lawn for earthworms. So, sure, you put down grub killers and conventional insecticides, but then that's not going to help you. So, sadly, you either have to directly get rid of that animal, or else, you know, try to reduce the earthworm population. And usually trying to reduce the earthworm population is not a viable option. So sorry, bud. And the other way to get rid of the mole is in the form of this spring trap thing where these spikes go down this guided rail that is set in the tunnel of the mole. There, so, I did death talk for tonight.
So, and that is truthfully, so had a shit ton of mole problems throughout my career, especially on the golf course. And mm-hmm. I will say that trapping is the only thing that's effective. And I learned a lot from this guy who lectures. He's lectured at Ohio State a long time ago, Penn State. He's been around the Midwest, but I just gave it to you. The Mole Man. So I'll have J-Pink throw this up in the chat. You can take a look at it, Steve-O. He'll say the same thing. And that's where I learned to say that, hey, like chemicals and all that kind of stuff doesn't work. And that Ray is right. That the primary food source is actually earthworms for the mole. So basic premise of what he talks about in here is that, you know, if you see tunnels, basically, if you have dirt, like loose dirt that's you know, flipped up, go ahead and just kind of scatter that around the lawn, almost like take it with a shovel and fling it like you're, you know, throwing top dressing or whatever. Step all those tunnels back down and then watch the next day and see which ones pop up. And you'll slowly be able to kind of zero in on where the mole is. They've got feeding tunnels and they've got kind of like main tunnels that they live in and things like that, right? So find the main one he's living in, then you can set your traps accordingly and you have a higher chance of getting he or she out of there. So I'd highly encourage you to do that. It is not pretty when you bring the mole up out of the trap, but it is, right? Satisfying?
It can be. It can be satisfying. No, it can be satisfying, especially if you are like Spackler on Caddyshack.
That was a gopher. But I think
that was a gopher. But then the same principles apply in that. Notice how he didn't go for Let's just put Paris green on all of the greens. Nope. Instead, he went full warfare on that gopher. And I'm afraid that that's how you're going to have to do it on this mole. I mean, there's no other way to do it, right, Ryan?
No, there's not. All right. Let's see here. Steve-O, good luck, man. Dusty Androsky, what a name. Sounds like a fullback in football. What would you guys recommend on a cool season lawn, primarily Kentucky bluegrass and turf type tall fescue, as a feeding schedule? I am in sand country and granular seems to leach out before it's used up. Well, Dusty, I think what Ray and I both would tell you in a soil like that is that nutrient loading, the act of, you know, putting out something that's going to be, you're going to consider to be there for weeks and weeks on end and things like that, is not the most ideal solution. You're going to be in the situation where you're talking about lower rates at a higher frequency or more times per year that you're going to be applying. And so you can be as lazy as you want to be, but what that ends up doing, right, Ray, is that creates peaks and valleys, both in terms of the aesthetics of your turf, but quite possibly the health of your turf too, right?
Absolutely.
So just real quick, Ray, in a sandy soil, you know, for it seems like Dusty understands that granular leaches out.
And
what would be...
He said in the chat, been spraying urea and AMS every few weeks.
Every few weeks. Okay. So, Ray, this is more akin to... Well, I would love to see a soil test on this just to really dive in and understand what's going on. But
why? Yeah. Why?
Also, Ray, you're a ghost.
Yeah, I'm a ghost right now, and I will be right back because my cam did something peculiar that unexpected, but then I should be back shortly. But anyway,
right.
Here's my thought on this is if somebody is not getting the response they think they should be getting from nitrogen, you know what I say to them? Stop applying nitrogen. Figure out why your grass is non-responsive. And the reason why I say this is because the other pollutant nutrient in the environment is nitrites. And source of nitrites is, ta-da, nitrogen applied to areas that is not being optimally utilized by the plants or the grass.
Yeah, if you're spraying every few weeks, I would like to know what rates you're using there, Dusty. As Ray said, you know, we make an application of anything and we don't see a response. It's concerning. Let me see if I can tag him. Yes, Devin, Dusty. Where are you located? So I think that the concern there is that, like, what just Ray just said, like, there could be something else that is leading you to not see a response, right? And so having peaks and valleys. I would be interested to know too about your growth, right? So, you know, for how long do you see a growth response and to what level, right? So, one thing, if you want to go down this route, you can. Ray, I always think it's interesting when people don't see responses to nitrogen or what they say in terms of color. I always too ask, well, what about growth, right? So, it may be interesting to do clipping volume. I don't know if you collect clippings, Dusty, but let's just check and see and try to measure. I don't care if you just have a, you know, your normal mower bag or something like that, but mow one defined area and try to do that as often as you mow, if it's twice a week, whatever, and just see if it starts to tail off at all based on, hey, it's been 3 days after I treated and I've got, you know, a bag and a half in this front yard area, whatever that is. I don't know how big the yard is, anything like that. It doesn't need to be huge, okay? But let's say that 12 days after the application, I've got like less than 2/3 of the bag. That would be an interesting thing to know, is it a color issue that we're having, or is it a growth issue, or is it both? So take that for what it's worth and try to kind of parse out what we're seeing here, whether it's color growth. And if not, Ray, you know, you fly in the Ginja and you have him come out there and do his 5-step process and beat the shit out of some kids while he's there. We'll get a whole busload for him, I guess. Wouldn't that be great? Remember go ahead. You go first, and I have a question for you. Go ahead.
Okay. And then, as I said, what I would look at is, if I'm not seeing a response to nitrogen, you know, my first impulse is to then find out soil pH, find out sulfur levels, find out if there's excess salts in the soil. I mean, I want to find out all of those things before I start seeing we're going to apply more nitrogen, we're going to apply more of this, more of that. Because, Ryan, do you know what my experience is with sandy soil?
Mm.
It's opposite of what people think, in that I find that the grass is actually extremely responsive to very low rates of any input applied. And that is why I prefer to deal with grass on sand in the first place.
He's very low pH. He is in Superior, Wisconsin, which is right across the water there from Duluth, Minnesota. So, yeah, he could, at 5'3", that could be tough.
Yeah, I mean, what that tells me is, okay, my last experience dealing with turf grass growing on below pH 6 soil was, I had people that were diligently applying both 111 and AMS to their lawn, and they were asking, why is my grass not getting greener? And it seems like I have to fertilize more and more and more. And, you know, when I got their pH up to 6.5, the grass stayed green, and it didn't need that much nitrogen anymore, Ryan. Go figure that one.
I think that this is definitely a situation where some pH modification, specifically lime, Dusty, would be in your best interest. So get you a couple of bags of that, start off. I mean, at 5'3", Ray, I don't think there's any problem. I think somebody actually said 50 pounds. Yeah, I wouldn't have any problems going 50 pounds total for the year and get that stuff going. So,
yeah,
which you need
for sure.
All right. Let's see here. Oh, the question I was going to ask you, you ever seen that Seinfeld episode where Kramer's in the karate class and he beats up all the little kids? And then at the end of the episode, they corner him in an alley and beat the shit out of him. Man, wouldn't it be great if we could set something up like that for Jinja? Get him quartered in an alley and have a bunch of little kids just beat him. Not kill him, not hurt him or anything.
Just swarm him and give him some payback because, ooh. You know, Ryan, I know you're a father, but did you ever think that it was appropriate discipline to just elbow your kid so hard in the chest that he flies backwards?
No, so much so that I never thought that I would be the subject of a website called SerialDomesticAbuser.com. That's right, www.SerialDomesticAbuser.com. Check it out for yourself. We didn't make it up. The Genji did. So take that for what it's
he
worth.
Did
All it. Right.
Yeah.
Spicy Gherkin. One of my favorite names on here. Hey, guys, I'm sorry I'm late. Did I miss any homoerotic experiences involving Zoysia or... Well, just got to go back in the show and find out, Spicy Gherkin. I put a Zoysia plug in a bare area just to see how long it really takes. A single Zoysia plug. Don't hold your breath. And hopefully, if you come back in a decade, it will be the size of like a big screen TV.
Yep.
What do you think, Ray?
For sure. It depends. It depends because if we're talking about a single plug, then I've seen a single plug of Zoysia literally grow out approximately a square foot every 6 months of growing season. Okay, mm-hmm. I've seen it happen. I mean, but then here's the thing about a single plug of Zoysia is that, you know, Spicy Gherkin, that is actually the best way for somebody to take over a neighborhood. Because I have a single plug of Zoysia story. And
you
this
really
is kind
do?
Of a terrible one. Yeah, I have a single plug of Zoysia story because at one time, my father decided that after seeing the hell that I went through trying to save the TIF 328 turf from diseases and insects, he thought, why not just solve the problem by sticking a single sprig of emerald zoysia into one corner of the lawn? Fast forward to a year after he passed, I ended up putting Soul Stealer over that entire lawn.
Well, sometimes you just gotta punt, right? All right, let's see here. Eric88. Micronutrients look good on my Mayo 3 soil test. However, is there a problem with applying feature every 3 weeks or so just to keep up some color? No.
Whoa, not a problem. However, here's again another example of if somebody tells me they need to apply a lot of iron or even a lot of nitrogen, as our previous callers have said, to maintain color, I would look at a more fundamental issue. Their sulfur levels. And the reason why they might be getting a great response out of feature even is because the base material in that bag of feature is none other than ammonium sulfate. That might well be why they're getting that nice color, where what may actually solve their problem so that they don't need to be pumping the lawn with feature every 2 to 3 weeks is get your sulfur level up.
Like I said, as far as a maintenance rate, you can go on the lower end of that and still achieve good color.
Yeah, ounce per thousand square foot. I mean, you can, but then, my God, that's a lot of work.
Well, and I think that's where you do look at other products, right, that are just solely iron, right, that could give you the same color response, and to your point, Ray, with less work. So just don't buy it from Golf Course Lawn Store because it'll be bullshit. So, okay. Let me get back over here. Mark the Mutt, our good friend up in Southeast Michigan, would microdosing AMS and monopotassium phosphate help to establish sod quicker? Sorry, always wondered about this, even though I'm not looking into sod. Always love listening, fellas. So on the, let me go back. Short answer, we can dive in later on this, but yes, to a certain extent. And there was some research done on irrigation, and I think there was a nutrient component to it too at the University of Tennessee here on zoysia sod array. And what they did was they did like micro irrigation, meaning that they would basically like mist the sod for like 15 seconds every, like, I don't know what it was like 8 minutes or 10. I don't know. I can't remember all the particulars. Bottom line, though, is that they were trying to find the right way to get it to take. And part of this was like laying the groundwork. This is research that's probably like 2 or 3 years old at this point, but it was starting to lay the groundwork for some of the stuff that they're going to do in the World Cup, right? Where they're trying to grow grass indoors and they have different irrigation regimes and things like that. So what was interesting, though, is that they were able to establish it quicker with some of these micro irrigation schemes that they had cooked up. I don't know on the nutrient component, but I do know the researcher who did that work, and I will ask him and find out what they learned about that, because there was some talk too at one point about for the World Cup, like potentially flying drones inside, right, and doing, because that way they didn't have to big like a big sprayer or anything like that across the grass, basically flying drones like every day with very small amounts of fertilizer to get
Ryan,
plant nutrients out. Yes.
While you were talking, I was thinking about how we routinely irrigate in, say, zoysia sod here in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. We don't do that deep and infrequent bullshit when trying to establish sod. You know how we irrigate sod here if we want it to take? And the people that know what they're talking about are not actually to be subjects of Jono's turf. Do you know how we do it? We plan on 3 to 4 very short irrigations throughout daylight hours. We're not trying to soak the sod. We're just trying to keep moisture at the top so that the sod doesn't dehydrate. And if the sod doesn't dehydrate, it then sends roots quickly down into the soil below. Because, you know, I got a call one time, or several times, about, oh my God, my sod is dying. I spent $10,000 on it and it's all dying. And I ask, okay, how are you irrigating this? Every other day. Or the one where I wanted to scream was when the guy told me, I'm only watering at 7 p.m. at night. And I literally asked him, why the hell are you doing that? Oh, a board of water supply said to water at night because that conserves water. Well, you know what? Board of water supply doesn't give a fuck about your lawn.
I feel like listen to them. What I picture in that situation is you calmly asking him to put down the phone and answer the door when you show up in a few minutes. And then you putting him into a headlock and giving him a noogie until his scalp bleeds. You know, nothing too violent, but just enough to really be like, you dumb motherfucker. I'm going to make you feel up. This. Yeah. Every time you get in the shower for the next week, your scalp's going to burn because you're a fucking idiot. And you're only allowed to shower at 7 p.m. because I fucking said so. I'm the authority on water.
But then, yeah, to be honest with you, you know, if sod is irrigated at that 4 times a day for 5 to 10 minutes, Ryan, do you know what happens? That damn sod takes in approximately 2 weeks every time. How's that for fast?
There you go.
You know.
Let's see here. Cam, Elevated Lawnscapes. Sup, fellas? Any concern with going max rate on the new a new PGR at 1.25-inch TTTF Kentucky Bluegrass mix. Finally going to regulate the backyard after sand living, leveling. 99% sure it will be fine. I don't have any concerns.
Send cool it, season. Sir. Send it. Send it.
If you're filled, if you're filled in and you feel like you've, you know, pushed out and filled in those voids, I have no concern of that at all. Make sure you're clean on disease. Go from there. Okay. Lock Hair Monster. Ray, do you use the foundation spray gun for the Tomahawk backpack sprayer to spray weeds in the lawns? Jeez.
I know what he's talking about, and I'm going to tell you, Lawn Care Monster, please, please, please do not. Because the foundation spray gun, Ryan, is literally the mass-produced Chinese copy of the JD9 spray gun. And that is just not.
You don't want to spray weeds with that. Here, I'm going to show you. I'm going to throw this in the link to JPink.
So yeah, because that's just not, you know, good coverage. And if you do manage to make that spray gun have good coverage on the turf, you probably are operating it at such a high pressure that whatever you're applying as a herbicide is probably going to drift 100 feet in all directions. And we will have to feature you on a Joe Knows Turf episode. How's that?
You know, I've seen a few people in my
try to do it
driving around try to do it. And seeing, and I remember this one guy one time, Ray, was going around the yard spraying with this thing, and it looks just like this, and you know when like somebody just sits there and blasts it, like they sit there and hold it. This guy was like bending his knees a little bit and like really like, you know, giving it to the weed. And he had so much determination on his face. I think I had told this to somebody on the Discord when I saw it happen that, you know, he looked like had the intense focus and rage about him. Like, you know, when you pee and you're trying to knock like a dingleberry that's a poop stuck to the side of the bowl and you're just trying to mash it off there with your pee and really bearing down. That's what he looked like spraying with that JD9 on those weeds. Totally inappropriate. Just doesn't work. Just like my joke, right? Totally inappropriate. The joke doesn't work, but don't use the JD9, you know, just like, hey, get the toilet brush out, do it the right way. You know, get yourself, even just the Kemalon gun will be fine. And, you know, go from there.
Or if not that, Lawn Care Monster, I think it's time for you to upgrade to the regulated wand holding the T-Jet AIC tip at the end of it. And you know what, the Lawn Care Monster? If you actually do have the Tomahawk backpack sprayer, maybe you and I need to have a talk off camera, because that's an excellent machine, but it does need a little modification to make it appropriate for lawn weed control.
He says you can drop the PSI down to 60. That's still no bueno.
No. No.
Paul Smith says, he says, oh, she turf man, that's how I spray all my weeds at 300 PSI. I don't know if he's talking about the hose and the poop off the toilet bowl or what. Paul, you could have, seriously, you want a $1 million idea here? I'll give it to you for free. All right. You get that JD9, you hook it up, and get yourself one of those like swivel seats, you know, like the UPS drivers have in their trucks. And if you just spray the lawn from the seat of the truck, you don't get out. You just prune that bitch up to 300 PSI. And if you got one way over there by the back door in the garage, you just kind of angle it a little bit. You know, you know how you used to do that? You know, you've been out there watering with the hose, you know, on the side of the backyard. And you put your thumb over it a little bit and you touch your angle real low. Like, I'm telling you, just like, you know, sometimes you got that, piece of shit with the corn in it right there in that bowl. It's been dried up for a little while. You forgot about it earlier. You got to put your leg up on the bowl and really get down on that bastard after you drank 3 gallons of water. Same thing, Paul. But seriously, how many lawns could you spray if you just sat in the seat at 300 PSI and just went from house to house? It's $1 million idea. Shitter Lawns. That's it. We're going to call it right there. Shitter Lawns LLC right there. I'm all for it. All right. Oh, boy. I got wound up on that one. Sorry. All right, we have a couple more here. Oh, Dusty Androsky, former fullback from Green Bay Packers, says, I did start Lime last season. I hope he's a Packers fan and not a Vikings fan. I just violated all of his sensibilities right there. I did start Lime last season. I haven't got a test yet this year, being lazy and haven't done it. 64,000 square feet to cover with Lime is a lot. Been doing it slowly, sections at a time. God bless you, sir. That is a lot of Lime. But I think you will have much more luck with all that stuff. Two more quick ones here, right? Oh, Eric did say that his sulfur is at 20 parts per million. All right. That's, you can live with that. Two more quickies
yes and no.
here.
Yes okay, and no. Go ahead. Because
go ahead.
If he still has a color issue, then you know what? I have no issues jacking that sulfur up to 50 or 100 parts per million in his case. I have no issues doing it because I'm going to say this right now. This is considered a minimum, okay? And when I say minimum, think of a minimum like a D minus on your senior trigonometry test. It's a D minus. And what's going to happen when you bring home a D minus? Do tell me.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, I knew.
not well.
Yeah.
I just, you know, it's all about the effort. It's all about the effort. Okay, let's see here. Josh Fuller, I have just been hit with dollar spot. And I mix ammonium sulfate and citric acid together of alkaline soil, 7.5 to 8 pH. Will that help or hinder dollar spot? St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks, guy. Just leave the citric out for now. I don't think that that's going to really do you any favors at this point.
No, don't add citric, and I'll tell you why you don't add citric, Ryan.
Why is that?
It's because the second you start adding citric acid to any kind of a tank mix, unless your intent is to fry the unholy hell out of that lawn, the following conditions have to be met for a citric acid application. Minimum of a pound in a gallon of water of citric acid. And number two, that spray mix literally has to be watered in yesterday.
Yeah.
Not tomorrow.
Like walking through the sprinklers as you're spraying.
Yeah. Not tomorrow. Not next week. Your citric acid application got to be watered in yesterday.
Let me do something here. So, a couple of things here for you, Josh, is that the ammonium sulfate app will help. I mean, the idea there is essentially that if you grow
get your nitrogen
yourself,
up.
Yeah, grow yourself,
get your
out
nitrogen
of that.
Up. Yeah.
You know, research. Go ahead.
Because Ryan, I think you're familiar with the research where the research has found that if you keep a certain minimum part per million of nitrogen in the grass tissue, the turf grass is essentially highly resistant to dollar spot infection. I remember seeing that paper somewhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of that work done about 20 or so years ago at Ohio State. And if I remember correctly, it's 4.5% dry matter and nitrogen tissue content. So that's not super jacked up on nitrogen, but it's not lean and mean either. So, you know, you're talking about seeing a reduction in incidence of dollar spot when you do that. So making that application will be good. Weather conditions in St. Louis, let's just see here. I mean, this is prime time of year as far as typically when we would have.
Is this dollar spot hell right now in that area?
Oh, dude, the temps are just made for it. It's a little hot here. It's a little hot here today through Tuesday, but that rain on Wednesday, boy, howdy. I'm going to tell you what, Thursday morning when you walk out, Josh, will be your key. So let's just say with your weather, you've got 90 today, 88 tomorrow, 91 Tuesday, and then rain rolling through Wednesday. So my recommendation would be this, is that, you know, try to get your application of ammonium sulfate out either early in the morning and watered in, or late in the evening, you know, around dusk, and then water in after that. The other thing you can do to help yourself out with Dollar Spot is reducing leaf wetness in the morning time, right? So that dew that is on the ground is not just water, right? It's what we call guttation water, G-U-T-T-A-T-I-O-N. Look that up, and what you'll find is that there's these plant exudates that have a lot of sugar, and those are not antagonistic. What am I thinking of here? Opposite. Anyway, they help.
They're conducive to Dollar Spot. And so, correct. Ryan, here's where I'm thinking is that is kind of why, you know, that 4 or 5 a.m. irrigation scheduling, that is actually the best thing you can do for Dollar Spot, because that early morning irrigation essentially knocks down all of the guttation on the grass. It just knocks it down, washes it off.
Correct. And people will get freaked out about that, about, you know, what could that do? Is that going to cause other issues, things like that? That's where knowing what pathogens are out there and present, right? So I'm not worried about, you know, Pythium or something.
He added it's bluegrass and a little rye. I was looking at Thursday also. It's been super rainy lately.
What I was going to say is that, you know, make this app, get it watered in. If you have any fungicide that you can put out, propiconazole is probably going to be like the most
economical,
down the middle, economical that you can do. But what I would say is that when you make these applications, try to do it before Wednesday's rain, because whoever doesn't, and your good bellwether is going to be walk out there Thursday morning right after the rain, right at dawn, and it's either going to look like it snowed and you've got mycelium everywhere, because you'll see huge growth of mycelium following a rain, and you'll know Thursday morning how you did. That's going to be the bellwether. So try to get that app out here pretty quick. Last thing I'll say is that if it's really advanced, one thing that you're trying to do is you're not going to cure where it's already affected and, you know, where you have problems necessarily. As the Dollar Spot pathogen in cool season advances its infection on the plant, one thing it does is it cuts off a certain amount of water from getting through the plant. It destroys xylem tissue, which is responsible for passing water from the roots up into the crown and the shoot. So if you're trying to get that ammonium sulfate out there and you're banking on that being a granular, getting uptake by the roots and all that kind of stuff, you know, just be mindful that that might be kind of inefficient right now. So if you can melt it down and spray it, all the better. Lower rate, less issues with, you know, over-applying or something like that. You can nail your rate and be good to go. So, all right. Short question with a long answer. Sorry, we could have gone all night on that one. All right, last one that we're going to take, and then we've got a couple that we're going to stay for next time here. All right, Dylan Miller question. Any thoughts on using a new BGR to help with control of oannuals? So I'm assuming that we're talking about in cool season, Dylan, because where you are, you got cool and warm season. Yeah, it does reasonably well if you can keep up the effort on... if you can keep up the effort on rates and timing and being antagonistic again with weather, right? So you're trying to beat that up through that period when it's really bad. There was one, I'm going to see if I can find the tweet. There was a really good tweet about how it was doing on, I think this was more on bent grass, but still same idea. Ray, any thoughts on this? I know it's not really your territory, but.
No, I would probably say that you apply your anew at a time when, in fact, it will stress the poa. And our listener, Paul Smith, and also Paul Outlaw, has some experience with this, where they deliberately apply anew in late spring to stress poa out. They do it. It has been done.
Well, there you go. All right. Now I can't find that tweet, but I remember seeing something about it. All right. Anyway, take that for what it's worth. All right. That is our last question. And I did not do my homework of teeing up a Geno's turf. We'll do for just our members, we'll do a quick Jono's turf in the after show, which I don't know that we need to name this. Are we naming this?
If we do that, we have to do a whole new members. We got to do a whole new link. Yeah. So
remember,
just hang on for like 2 minutes and then there'll be a new link in the Discord.
Yep. We'll do that and we'll hang out. Is it easier to do it on Twitch?
No.
We try to punish Jay Pink sometimes. Sometimes. Speaking of getting punished, there's the woman. Oh, never mind. I'm not going to talk about that. All right. So we've come to the end of the show. We really do appreciate you hanging out with us on a Sunday night. This week coming up, our schedule is as follows. Wednesday, we will be here for another Q&A show. We might do a call-in. We haven't done a call-in in a while. And I thought I saw Paul Smith saying that he's too good to call us, so we have to call him. So maybe we'll do that to kick the show off. I saw him in there. Mm-hmm. He said, when are we going to do a reverse call-in or something like that? So, Paul, I don't want you to waste any of your anytime minutes on us. We'll call you. We'll call you collect. We have to. At home. On your landline. All right. And so we'll do that Wednesday night. Next weekend is Memorial Day weekend. We will be off. Nothing there. So spend some time with your family. Have a good time. And the following week we'll get back into it. Paul Smith wants to know why I'm shitting all over him. It's because I love you, Paul. I wouldn't talk shit about you. If I didn't like you, I wouldn't talk about you at all. So that's not exactly true, though. I guess. I don't like Ron Henry. I talk about him a lot. Paul, you're not on that list, I promise. I love you. So, all right. With that, everybody have a great week, great evening. We'll see you on Wednesday, Wet and Wild.
All right. So you let me know when you're ready for the sounder. We'll do it up.
Let's do it.
Jono's turf. Hi, I'm Jono. I'm gonna give you a bunch of accurate turf facts today. Because Joe knows turf.
Ray, it's times like this where I sometimes wonder how we get ourselves into this mess of trying to explain the actions of others and making sense of it all.
Right.
It's maddening at times. And today's Joe Knows Turf is precisely that. It's maddening. The angles that people are taking and the efforts that they are undertaking to sell their product and position it in the market in a place that's different than others, at least so as they purport. But when we look behind the curtain, it's a lot the same. So tonight what we'd like to talk about here is a group, I think we featured them on the show maybe a few times, called Sunday or Get Sunday. And they are a product provider in the lawn care space that will effectively send a whole year's worth of stuff to your door for a subscription fee, right? And they'll send a different box that has different things. We've looked at their products before in the weed control realm, which is basically like this iron-based EDDHA and HDTA chelates to control weeds, not necessarily label pesticides. So they've gone down this road of trying to position their products in such a way that are very environmentally sensitive and protecting the earth and not poisoning it and things like that. So before we, pass judgment or anything like that, I thought we would take a look at some of their most recent marketing material that's been sent to me over the last few weeks and maybe just digest that before we unpack what is actually in there and maybe some of the differences and similarities that exist to the big boys out there in the marketplace. So I want to start with this video that was sent to me just today. As a marketing clip, let's go ahead and dive into this real quick.
Hey, neighbor, is that Sunday too?
Sure is. This is their granular lawn fertilizer.
Is it still pesticide free?
Yep, it is.
Is it still better for kids and pets?
You betcha.
Still easy to apply?
Is the bear shit in the woods?
So is it still better ingredients?
Yeah, that's what they do.
So it's my choice then. I can do anything.
Our fertilizers are always pesticide-free. With the right support and nutrition, you can have a beautiful green lawn without the risk.
Okay, so that was a TikTok video that played. We might watch that one more time here in just a second, J-Pink, just to key up on a few things that were off. Yes, I understand it's an ad and whatever, but you know, you still have to kind of paint the right picture. Ray, the first thing that I'm going to ask you, just on the general premise, right? When we're talking mm-hmm. about DIY products in the homeowner space, right, of how you would trust people to apply nutrients and get reasonably good results, would you trust them more with a liquid and a hose end sprayer? Because as you know, the Sunday things come in like this pre-packaged like bag that you kind of hook up to the hose and apply. You can see this guy standing here in the black shirt. For those of you that are audio only, there's two guys. One's on one side of the fence in his backyard. Other guy's on the other side of his fence in his backyard. One's using a granular product out of a granular spreader. Other one's using a hose end, like pre-packaged thing. Funny enough, as the guy goes through in the backyard and he's talking and jamming and whatever else, he's just standing there holding his Sunday lawn hose end in the same spot for like 15 seconds. I don't think that's
all entire 15. Yeah.
Ray, let me ask you, what is your level of trust, say on a 1 to 10 scale, for each of these application methods in the hands of a homeowner that's a DIYer?
Okay, I'll start with the liquid part because you brought it up. My trust level is literally 2 to 1.5. Whereas,
no faith.
I'm not kidding. No, I'm not kidding because, Ryan, you yes. know these siphon-operated hose-in devices? Did you know that even the dilution ratio changes depending on how much water pressure is incoming into that mixing head? Did you know that?
Yeah.
So, in other words, say you got a guy where his incoming water pressure into that device is 75 PSI. Okay? That guy is going to have a much more diluted mixture coming out of the other end of that mixing head, whereas the guy that only has 35 to 40 PSI, he's going to have a much more concentrated mixture. So old boy has better not hold that dispenser in one spot and yammer yammer with the guy on the other side of the fence. Just saying.
And I think that's the thing that is maybe lost a little bit, and I get it's marketing, it is what it is, but I really think that educating consumers on the proper way to apply. Remember that paper that we went through on burn and return? Oh gosh, it's been 4 or 5 months now, but they talked about I think it was in Maryland, right, that there was an extreme lack of knowledge. We actually talked about it with John Emerson too, when from the University of Delaware Turf. Mm-hmm. And he is doing all this work. Yeah, he's doing all this work too. So I just find it super disingenuous to kind of go the environmental route, right? And say, well, hey, you know, we have products that we have fertilizers that don't have pesticides in them. And kind of take that vein, which is a little bit weird in a certain sense. But at the same time,
hey, you know, Ryan, it don't matter if something has a pesticide or not, because do you know what's being gone after even more harder than pesticides is now they're even targeting nitrogen and phosphorus runoff. So I don't give a shit if your fertilizer is organic. It's still considered an environmental issue. It don't matter.
So if we're going to go push that route, I think we should take the next step. And this is my advice to Sunday. And they probably don't care. Who this fat asshole from Ohio is and what he thinks, right? But while I'm here and I have your unsolicited and undivided attention, I'll say that you should offer the opportunity for your folks in the commercials to demonstrate proper application techniques. If we're going to go to the level of scrutinizing about environmental impacts of different products, we should obviously and clearly scrutinize the way that they're being put out just as well. So I'll offer that there as a friendly piece of advice. There'll be no invoice sent yet. But if we need to go down that road, we will. I'm kidding. All right. So the other part of this, too, is You know, they mentioned that too. Let's watch this one more time, and I want to specifically listen to a part about their granular fertilizer. And as you're doing this, you can kind of watch Homeboy here, not moving the sprayer at all. But we'll talk. Let them talk about what is in their fertilizer, all that kind of stuff. Go ahead.
Hey neighbor, is that Sunday too?
Sure is. This is their granular lawn fertilizer.
Is it still pesticide free?
Yep, it is.
Is it still better for kids and pets?
You betcha.
Still easy to apply?
It's bare shit in the woods.
So it's still better ingredients?
Yeah, that's what they do.
So it's my choice then. I can do anything.
Our fertilizer, you know, is always pesticide.
Right here, okay. Back up, just play it.
It's still better ingredients?
Yeah, that's what they do.
So it's my choice then. I can do anything.
Our fertilizers are always pesticide free. With the right support and nutrition, you can have a beautiful green lawn without the risk.
Wow.
Okay. So, two things there. One, without the risk, I'm again wondering. So, typically, the products that we would apply, or homeowners would apply, not necessarily professionals, would apply that have some pesticide in a fertilizer formulation, right, Ray, would be potentially their grub control might be in the form of fertilizer that's got insecticide impregnated on it. Maybe GrubX is a standalone product, doesn't have fertilizer on it. Weed and feed, if you're doing that, I mean, you're in a whole different stratosphere.
You're in a whole different world. Yeah. You're in a whole different world. And
we wouldn't recommend that. And then last, probably the most commonplace would be granular with pre-emergence, right? It's granular fertilizer with pre-emergence. So there is corn. Well, we'll talk about that when we get to that point. Last thing here too, Ray, I was a little unsure of is, this is just an aside, but you know, he said there's a bear and it blanks out in the woods. And I think what they did there, commonplace would be, you know, bear shit in the woods. I think he said, stroke his big bat fucking bear dick in the woods.
I think so too.
I don't know.
And you know,
I don't know.
I mean, the guy might be a little bit kinky. I don't know. I mean, but Ryan,
is it bestiality if you're just watching them have sex?
Hey, I mean,
I don't know where that came from. That was a terrible joke.
Whatever. I mean, because
I'm just taking cracks here.
Okay. Seriously, you know, I'm looking at how, in general, most fertilizers do not come with pesticides added. And the reason why they don't come with pesticides added is because the time that you need that fertilizer does not often coincide when you would need that pesticide. Okay, it just generally doesn't coincide. I mean, and so in a lot of cases, manufacturers, to yield to customer demands for convenience and ease, they'll do it, but then they'll do it knowing that they're not providing the best product possible. Would I be right in saying that?
I think so. And I think that there's other ways to do that. So yeah, vilifying fertilizer with pesticides is a pretty interesting angle. So to take that a step further, let's look at some other marketing material that was sent to me here this past week on the other Get Sunday account. I think this was on Facebook or something like that. So this is a sponsored post from Get Sunday. And it says, no harsh chemicals, just hardworking. Better for the plant ingredients that get real results. Okay, so it then has a graphic. This is for the user folks that are audio only. What's in your fertilizer? Question mark. And on the left, they're showing traditional fertilizers with a bag that's just spilled open on the grass, which if they had to do that for marketing material, hey guys, not great, even if you needed it for the shot. And that ain't Photoshop. Don't tell me it's not. And then Sunday is on the right, and it shows some hose end sprayer bag of something, not sure which product that is, but it says under traditional fertilizers, 2,4-D, skull and crossbones, glyphosate, skull and crossbones, bifenthrin, skull and crossbones. So they're insinuating.
Hang on, Ryan.
Yes.
Stop right there, because I want to know, when would it make sense for somebody to impregnate glyphosate onto fertilizer. My goodness, I mean, that would be one hell of a cut and kill. If you know, you know.
Well, that's right. That's the South Dakota blend. You gotta pay. You can apply that
cut
product.
And kill.
It has one use and one purpose, and your insurance rates are off the charts high. So they're insinuating that there's 2,4-D, there's glyphosate, bifenthrin, which again, not how I would choose to apply bifenthrin if it was required. 2,4-D, we talked about weed and feed and how that's a really, really inefficient way to achieve weed control and deliver fertilizer at the same time. And glyphosate, Ray just, completely debunked that, where that's completely impractical. That whole word being there is just for clicks and just for people being like, oh, what?
That's just outrage bait. That's just outrage bait that they're trying to make it sound like these conventional fertilizer manufacturers, hey, they'll stick anything and everything in the bag. They don't care. They want to kill everything.
Sunday has, right? Good segue, Ray, has iron, check mark. Seaweed, check mark. Molasses, check mark. All right. Now, any one of those things, I wouldn't sit here and inexplicably say, hey, don't ever apply those to turf, right? There's no reason to do that.
Right.
I think they're fine. They're fine derivatives. They're
fine. They have their use case.
They do.
Yeah.
But are they a stand? Are these standalone products, right, that you can build a turf maintenance program around? Yes or no?
No, absolutely not. And Ryan, care to explain to people what happens when they load their soil with a lot of simple carbohydrates? And I'm already getting the picture in my head of Wilford Brimley saying, diabetes.
check your blood sugar. You check it often. Man.
Yeah.
Wilford Brimley, top 10 duster of all times. That dude's push broom flavor saver was a great one. So adding additional carbohydrates in that form are going to help minimally in terms of mineralization and things like that. But it's such a minute amount that I don't think you're going to see a true benefit of that. Now, seaweed extract, I'd have you go watch Dr. Travis Shaddix on turf epistemology. He had Dr. Eric Irvin on from the University of Delaware, previously of Virginia Tech, that did probably some of the most seminal and important work on biostimulants in the last 30 years. And it was a great presentation talking about use of seaweed and some other things, biostimulants and their effects can be. But again, I would look at what the rate of this is relative to what research has been published in terms of rates that affect. So having it in there is awesome, right? But are we using it at an appropriate rate and an appropriate frequency to see what research says supports the evidence of, hey, we're going to see a plant response, right, out of doing that. And finally, iron, same thing, I'm not super concerned about that, but I just thought this was extremely clickbaity, I think was the word you used, right? Outrage bait.
Yeah, it's outrage bait. Nothing more, nothing less.
at best, and at worst, it's outright dishonest. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, well, who is the main competitor to Sunday? And it's probably Scott's Miracle-Gro, right? Right. They are the big giant behemoth in the home lawn care space, have been for a long time. And I know that there'll be people that listen to our show and dog them. They are who they are. They do make some good products. I mean, there are some products that they make that a consistency standpoint and derivatives, they've got some good stuff. And I'm not going to say that don't have some bad stuff. Yes.
Ryan, because remember what I always tell people when they tell me, okay, I want a granular fertilizer, but I need it to be homogeneous and small particle. I always send those people down to their local big box store. And I say, your Scott's Turf Builder is almost like those high-end homogeneous greens-grade fertilizers, almost the same composition, methodology, and when you get the bag and break it open at home, what you find in that bag are a lot of particles that average about 1/16 of an inch. Okay, that's small because you know where I send people to get this particular product is when they tell me, okay, I'm real cutting and the stuff that I normally get that's the size of buckshot ain't going to work for me. And in that case, I say, okay, then you do a quarter of a pound to a half a pound of in from this product right here. That's good enough. That's simple enough. That'll work for you unless you have unusual needs. And you know what else I see in here that I really, really like?
What's that?
I noticed that they have both potassium sulfate and ammonium sulfate as part of their, you know, formulation. And what have we been talking about for the last month, Ryan? Same old subject comes up.
What's that?
Sulfur.
Oh, no.
You need sulfur.
And it's well, in the, I think with the whole thing on Scott's is not to sit here and rah-rah Scott's and say, hey, they're better than Sunday and everything like that. I think when you are trying to be the upstart and trying to be the disruptor and things like that, you have to do some things that maybe call attention to yourself and just get awareness in the marketplace, trying to get some market share and whatnot. But to take that angle and dig on products and say, hey, ours are better than theirs, though. So I'm not doing this to be an ass at all. I'm doing this.
Okay.
Just, hey, let's see what's in there. Go ahead.
One more thing, Ryan. You know what I don't see in this label that I was looking for very hard after that first slide? You know what I was looking for and I'm not finding? I'm not finding the glyphosate, the 2,4-D, or the bifenthrin. It's not in here. What the hell? What the hell, Ryan?
Yeah, don't see that on the label. Must not be in enough quantities to have to put on the label. All right, so for those on audio, and we are looking at the derived from statement, their analysis of Scott's Turf Builder Turf Food, which is their flagship product.
Mean product. Mean product. Yeah.
And what we've gotten here essentially is a, what is that real quick here? 12 divided by, gosh darn it, can't get my calculator to work. So Ray, this is 37.5% slow release. The balance of that is quick release. So it's going to give you some ass kicking right off the edge. A decent amount of sulfur there from when we look at our derived from statement here. We've got potassium sulfate and ammonium sulfate as our third and fourth derivatives. So our derived from is methylene urea, okay? Urea, potassium sulfate, ammonia sulfate, and iron sucrate. So effectively, go ahead.
And so what I usually tell people to do with something like this is I tell them, hey, if you have a warm season turf, start applying this in the spring at up to a half a pound of N per month per application, and then cut this off a month before dormancy. That seems to work well for people. And for the cool season guys, I say start feeding this right after the heat breaks in the summer and then stop about a month before dormancy for them too, because this little bit of methylene urea is going to keep on bleeding nitrogen for up to 30 days. It is going to keep on bleeding nitrogen. Same is true with the ammonium sulfate, because the other reason why I'm such an ammonium sulfate fanboy is that in many instances, you can get up to 30 days of nitrogen response out of ammonium sulfate, barring some rather specific soil conditions.
All right. So from we look at that label, now let's jump over and look at there's two main products that Sunday is selling as part of their granular lineup. Okay, so one is called Core Endurance and the other one is called Core Seaweed. Let's look first at Core Endurance. Okay, so this is a 12-pound bag. This covers 4,000 square feet. So effectively applying this product at 3 pounds per thousand square feet. It has an analysis rate of 2303. Okay. When we look at this label, they're saying that 15% of the polymer coat is solely available from polymer coat several coats. So like here, 15 divided by 23. So 65% solar release on this particular product. And you're going to be putting out at a rate just over 0.7 pounds of nitrogen each time. Now let's look into this derived from statement. Polymer coated, sulfur coated urea. So PCSU, urea, potassium sulfate, corn gluten meal, gypsum, leaf compost, and wood ash. All right.
Jesus Christ.
So, you know, there's some additional things in there. With the gypsum, the leaf compost, and the wood ash. Now, with those being the final and the derivative statement, we can assume that there's a very small amount of those in there. The corn gluten meal is going to give us some nitrogen that has an analysis of 1000, if I remember correctly. And so as we look at this product here, Ray, the small amount of corn gluten meal that we're putting out, you know, there's some argument here that, you know, it's going to help us with organic matter to a certain extent. The other thing, corn gluten meal is commonly used for in the organic market is for crabgrass prevention. And we have to put it out at an exceedingly high rate, like 20 pounds per thousand.
20 pounds per thousand. Yes. Yes.
To get good control. And essentially, for those of you scoring at home, that just creates a layer, a physical layer through which the crabgrass seeds cannot germinate up through or get enough light. Actually pop and germinate and things like that. So the downside of that, Ray, is that you're also loading your soil with, like, you know, 2 pounds of N, because again it has an analysis of 1000. So that's not what they're doing here, though. They're just putting it in the product, right? Adding it as
to say that
an additional derivative.
To say that it's in there. Yeah, to say that it's in there. And I'm looking at this product now and I'm kind of thinking, what would be the point of something like this, where, and okay, I've got another question for you, Ryan. When would you be deliberately adding gypsum to soil? When would you do it? I mean, because I know I have my use cases for gypsum.
You know, so here in cool season country, particularly in the Midwest, Northeast, gypsum, if you absolutely needed it, and again, we're talking about soils that we don't need to raise pH on, but they're deficient in calcium, which don't happen very often, right? Or we're worried about sodic soils, things like that. Don't happen very often in my part of the country. I'm wondering why the gypsum is in there, other than the fact that you know, we're talking about loosening soils, things like that. Use cases here would be situations where you know, we're going out prior to winter, or we're going out after winter. So sodic soil situations would be, you know, lots of road salts applied and it gets into some turf areas, things like that. And we're trying to move the salt and displace it out of the soil. The other option is that we are low in calcium. We need to apply supplemental calcium. It takes a lot of water because gypsum is a very insoluble material. So it takes a lot of water to solubilize. So that being said, I don't know why that's there. So I guess the point here is that, can we say that we have additional derivatives in here that are different or add something to the mix? Yeah, but I don't know that there's any value there. And if we're really boiling this down to the stars of the show, if I'm looking at methylene urea versus PCSCU, I'd put my money in stock into the methylene urea as a better source, especially in a homeowner sense, right, than relying solely on polymer coated, sulfur coated urea. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So let's dive over here and look at the other product, which is their sea green product. So very similar type of analysis. This is a 2404. And if we look at this, I believe it is roughly 30% slow release. And if we look at the derived from statement here, urea, polymer coated, sulfur coated urea, potassium sulfate, corn gluten meal, kelp, iron sucrate, and gypsum. So it's just reworked just a tad here.
Just a touch. Yeah.
And
however, Ryan,
Go ahead.
Here's my question. You know, I'm looking at the water insoluble nitrogen portion.
Sure.
Now that I'm looking, you know, go look at that. Look at the percentage of actual nitrogen available. And there is just very little difference between this and the OM Scott's product. And also, I still want to know, why would you put gypsum and corn gluten meal into a general use routine fertilizer? I mean, how does that make sense? Because Matt would be here and he would be jumping up and down saying, those are nothing but fillers. That's what he would be saying.
Well, and I'm going to go back to my own failings. I'll be honest, my own failings as a turf grass manager, and sort of reignited in thought and have been thinking about this more of watching and listening to Dr. Shaddix. But, you know, with there being so many things in this product, Ray, two thoughts on this. One, how do we know what is actually providing the value in a product like this? Number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, there's enough nitrogen here to make a lot of things look better. So, you know, what does this look like compared to if I put down, again, this is a 3-pound rate. So we're at 0.72 pounds of nitrogen with this product. If I were to put mm-hmm. down 0.72 pounds of ammonium sulfate, 2100, next to 0.72 pounds per thousand of
this stuff,
urea, and then this stuff. And I was, and let's say I did that over the course of an entire year. I don't know that we would be able to really parse out and say, hey, that one looks better. Now they do push the angle here of the kelp, right? So again, with like the seaweed extract and all that kind of stuff. And again, I'd strongly encourage you to go back and watch that that episode of Turf Epistemology where they talk about this with Dr. Eric Irvin. In this form, I don't know that you're going to see as much of a benefit, and especially with, I'd love to learn about the rates. Another thing that's really important with kelp and seaweed products is the source, right? So mm-hmm. the sourcing of where they're getting those materials, the raw materials from, how it's treated once it's harvested, all that kind of stuff makes a big difference in terms of how it actually provides turf response or doesn't.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. The things, again, just to kind of wrap this up, are a couple of different things. One is, you know, if you're going to go down that route of angling on the environmental aspect of how your product is superior, I strongly, strongly recommend that you advocate and push and educate on environmentally responsible application practices. And that goes for mixing and handling, i.e. the spilled bag of fertilizer in your ad. Cool. Mm-hmm.
I got one more, too, Ryan.
Go ahead.
I got one more angle. Do you know what I really have taken a hard look at in recent years? Products that are a lot of fillers and materials that make you feel good, but don't actually add immediate value to that application. And the reason why I'm looking at that, you know, part is, okay, Ryan, I'm going to give you a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to apply a half a pound of N to a field that's 5 acres, you know, in size. I want to give you a choice. You can either do that with AMS, or you can do that with one of these products that has a lot of fillers added to them. Which would you do? And also think about the size of the truck needed to bring this product that has all of these additional fillers to that site.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm going to go with something that I understand and can measure what the response will be and know that it's from the nitrogen, mm-hmm. right, in this particular case. Mm-hmm. And then if that application doesn't cure all of my ills or needs, wants, and desires, then I know I can add something additional to that that may elicit a TERF response that I want. So I take that for what it's worth. I don't like adding a whole bunch of complexity if it's not needed. So the other thing is just the vilification and again, just outright either ignorance or dishonesty when it comes to saying, well, we don't have any pesticides in our fertilizer. That's true because you're just selling fertilizer. I don't think anybody wanted to say, well hey, like where's your, hey, you got that great fertilizer, but where's the pesticides in it? Like, nobody's doing that. Mm-hmm. So it's clearly aimed at you know, going after a target market or a niche audience of folks that are either scared, pissed off, or just looking for something different. Totally understand that from a business perspective. However, it doesn't paint everybody else in a good light that is choosing to do those things or has responsible means of doing those things. So I'd also be careful there. The last thing is that the products themselves are not too dissimilar from the big boys in the industry. And so how you market and how you go after that, again, I understand being the disruptor, being the small fish next to the big fish in a giant pond, but there's better ways to go about that, at least in my estimation. And Ray, I'm sure yours too. So
yeah,
Sunday.
And one more question, or one more, you know, little question is that, okay, guys, what is the actual particle size of your polymer coated urea? Okay, what's your actual particle size? Because here's my issue. You know, anytime I assess a fertilizer, there's two things that I require because of the kind of turf that I normally deal with. One is particle size, and two is how well that fertilizer stays together during storage and how well it goes out when it's put through a spreader. And you know, when you have a fertilizer with varying sizes of particles, varying densities of particles, because this is what I see when somebody tells me, oh, I added wood ash, corn gluten meal, kelp meal, and then I want to add that to PCSU and SCU and then sulfate of potash. My question is, okay, sir, how are you going to make that into a form that spreads as uniformly as possible and doesn't get caught up in low-cut grass? Yeah, Ryan, you see the issue? You see the issue there?
I don't know. It's not a good situation. Mm-hmm. All I do know for certain, about as much certainty as I do or have as the folks at Sunday have about glyphosate being in fertilizer, is this. Probably the next Sunday product that we have to look forward to is going to be Grizzly Bear Ball Barf coming to a store near you. Great nitrogen source. Mm-hmm. Feed those geese, boys. All right. That's the end of this week's Joe Knows Turf.
All right, I'll cut it there.